More grabbing and shoving, shouting and slapping. I didn't understand where this man had come from, this lion who'd replaced my docile, frail excuse for a parent. A lion protecting his cubs. He knew that fear was the only weapon he had left to save my life, and if I didn't fear the threat of the plague, then damn it, I was going to fear him.
Did it work?
Some martyr I turned out to be. I think I cried all the way to Cairo.
Cairo?
There were no direct flights to Israel from Kuwait, not even from Egypt, once the Arab League imposed its travel restrictions. We had to fly from Kuwait to Cairo, then take a bus across the Sinai Desert to the crossing at Taba. As we approached the border, I saw the wall for the first time. It was still unfinished, naked steel beams rising above the concrete foundation. I'd known about the infamous security fence. What citizen of the Arab world didn't? But I'd always been led to believe that it only surrounded the West Bank and Gaza Strip. Out here, in the middle of this barren desert, it only confirmed my theory that the Israelis were expecting an attack along their entire border. Good, I thought. The Egyptians have finally rediscovered their balls. At Taba, we were taken off the bus and told to walk, single file, past cages that held very large and fierce-looking dogs. We went one at a time. A border guard, this skinny black African, I didn't know there were black Jews, would hold out his hand. "Wait there," he said in barely recognizable Arabic. Then, "You go, come." The man before me was old. He had a long white beard and supported himself on a cane. As he passed the dogs, they went wild, howling and snarling, biting and charging at the confines of their cages. Instantly, two large chaps in civilian clothing were at the old man's side, speaking something in his ear and escorting him away. I could see the man was injured. His dishdasha was torn at the hip and stained with brown blood. These men were certainly no doctors, however, and the black, unmarked van they escorted him to was certainly no ambulance. Bastards, I thought, as the old man's family wailed after him, weeding out the ones too sick and old to be of any use to them. Then it was our turn to walk the gauntlet of dogs. They didn't bark at me, nor the rest of my family. I think one of them even wagged its tail as my sister held out her hand. The next man after us, however, again came the barks and growls, again came the nondescript civilians. I turned to look at him and was surprised to see a white man, American maybe, or Canadian. No, he had to be American. His English was too loud. "Come on, I'm fine," he shouted and struggled. "Come on, man, what the fuck?" He was well-dressed, a suit and tie, matching luggage that was tossed aside as he began to fight with the Israelis. "Dude, come on, get the fuck off me. I'm one of you, come on." The buttons on his shirt ripped open, revealing a blood-stained bandage wrapped tightly around his stomach. He was still kicking and screaming as they dragged him into the back of the van. I didn't understand it. Why these people? Clearly, it wasn't just about being an Arab or even about being wounded. I saw several refugees with severe injuries pass through without molestation from the guards. They were all escorted to waiting ambulances, real ambulances, not the black vans. I knew it had something to do with the dogs. Were they screaming for rabies? That made the most sense to me, and it continued to be my theory during our internment outside Yeroham.
The resettlement camp?
Resettlement and quarantine. At that time, I just saw it as a prison. It was exactly what I'd expected to happen to us. The tents, the overcrowding, the guards, barbed wire, and the seething, baking Negev desert sun. We felt like prisoners. We were prisoners. And although I would have never had the courage to say to my father, "I told you so," he could see it clearly in my sour face.